live from Washington, D.C. every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. for an hour-long Generation Progress Takeover.
Check us out at genprogress.org or on Twitter at genprogress.
Hello and welcome to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. I'm your co-host, Brent J. Cohen.
And I'm Charlotte Hancock.
Thanks for joining us today. We're going to be talking about an issue that is incredibly important and for us during a really exciting week, because tomorrow begins Generation Progress's Fight for a Future Summit, where we bring together advocates, activists, and organizers, young advocates, organizers, and activists, 18 to 35, from around the country to talk and share about the work that's happening in the criminal justice reform and gun violence prevention spaces. Really excited about what's about to kick off Thursday and Friday. And to talk to us today more about their own activism and what brought them to D.C. for the 2019 Fight for a Future Summit, we're joined today by Chicago-based organizer and activist Ronnie Mosley and gun violence prevention advocate from Denver, Colorado, Karina Sartiagin. Thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Yes, thank you for having
me. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So just to jump in and sort of get our listeners acquainted with you and the work that you're doing and how you came to this work, Ronnie, could you just share with us what brought you to this work of fighting for gun violence prevention?
Sure. Blair Holt. Blair Holt was a close friend of mine. In 2007, Blair died on a city bus leaving his high school. A gentleman by the name of Michael Pace got on the bus having some type of altercation with a gentleman he saw, and blindly just shot into the bus. Blair died shielding one of his classmates. And so, in honor of Blair, I wanted to see what I can do to make sure it didn't happen again.
And how long have you been doing this now?
Ooh, that was 2007, so almost 15 years now.
Almost 15 years. Thank you. Karina, how did you get involved in this work?
Obviously, we never want to be personally affected by this, but unfortunately, I was basically dragged into this just by personal experience and just trying to be a voice for the people that haven't been heard in the situation that I was. When I was 16, being outside of my high school, I was shot because of a drive-by shooter and left me paralyzed from the waist down. Actually, the anniversary, I always kind of celebrate it kind of like a birthday, and it's happening here on Friday. And what better way to celebrate it than to share my story with other people in the way that I feel, you know, is healing for me.
Wow. So, first of all, thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you for the incredible work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. I think the young people are going to lead us out of this mess of gun violence.
I agree.
We are disproportionately likely to be victims of crime. We are disproportionately likely to, unfortunately, be perpetrators of gun violence. You look at 18 to 35-year-olds, and you look at the data there, and it's us. And it's us not because we made it, but because we've been handed this hand, and we're going to get us out of it. And I'm confident in that. And it's going to be, Karina, it's going to be you. Ronnie, it's going to be you, and it's going to be everybody that we are working with and talking with and fellowshipping with tomorrow, Friday, and everybody that we work and engage with back home in Colorado, in Chicago, and across the country. So mm-hmm. just to flat out say thank you. So what is your work look like right now? What are you doing, Ronnie? We'll come to you first. What are you doing back in Illinois? What does that look like day to day?
Absolutely. When I was growing up, I was a part of this organization called Mikvah Challenge. And Mikvah Challenge really taught me the beauty of policy. So today I have the extreme privilege of working with the Lieutenant Governor of Illinois, Juliana Stratton, and doing some amazing work there that includes a mental health and trauma campaign around youth and diversity and inclusion in higher education. But that mental health and trauma piece is, you know, I think the often ignored area of gun violence that we have to tap into.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about gun violence as if it just came out of nowhere, mm-hmm. and not talking about the root causes, the generational trauma,
yeah.
Systemic issues that we know give rise to gun violence.
Yes.
Thank you, Karina. If you could share a bit about how you're changing lives, how you're working to share your story and let folks know about you know, really what's possible here in a space that doesn't revolve around gun violence.
Well, I always try to just make sure that I'm reaching people in every platform, whether it's like through news outlets, articles, you know, just any way that I feel like it's a powerful message that we could get across. And like I've mentioned before, also just being that voice for people that feel like there's a situation that they can't relate to, you know, making it important that, you know, just because you were the only one involved doesn't make it less important. I think that's just where it comes down to, is just being able to share your story and not, you know, feel bad about, you know, the outlets that you're reaching out through, and just hold power with your story. I think that's what makes it important for everybody to know.
Yeah. I remember last year, Karina, at the summit, you told your story at a press conference, and I know that you'd told your story before in, you know, smaller settings, and also in very public settings via op-eds and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. But I think that really hit me that you decided to use these circumstances and pair that with legislative change. This was a press conference with Senator Chris Murphy mm-hmm. Introducing new gun violence prevention legislation. And you, I guess you made a decision that you didn't have to make, you know, like what sort of led you to say like, this has got to be me and I got to say yes to this.
Knowing that just being shot doesn't necessarily make me who I am as a person, I think that it's important to know that it adds character to who I am, and I'm holding power in knowing that this happened, but I'm holding the power in sharing that and knowing that there's a difference and knowing that my pain could be healing, you know, for other people as well. I mean, and for myself too, because I feel like the more that I share my story, the more that I realize that it's important to share, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Ronnie, you've also been sort of a part of this summit from early days, very early days. And this was something I think that you've seen over the course of the summit, people speaking truth to power, using deciding to take their personal story and turn that into change. How is that something that you feel has like progressed over the time of your summit attendance?
Oh, I mean, so the summit was the first of its kind, and I remember being in that moment with Sarah and just trying to figure out like when I connected with Sarah and I felt that I was not alone in this fight, how can we share that with other folks? How can we expand that? And so to see just the humble beginnings of the network and getting folks activated and mobilized, and where that has grown, it's grown not to just adults, but even the next generation. Like, I'm extremely proud of the work that the students from March of Our Lives have done, and I attribute that work to what has come out of the network.
I think I want to pick up on that thread when we get back. You're listening to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show, and we will be right back after this break.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of truth. The Leslie Marshall Show.
Brent J. Cohen.
And we've got some great studio guests today, some of the Generation Progress Network members from our Fight for a Future Network. We are talking today to Karina Sartagin-Vargas and also Ronnie Mosley. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Ronnie, just before this, we were talking a little bit about the origins of the summit and kind of how using your story to sort of use it as a force for change, or you know, the stories of people that you know as sort of a force for change, and as something that you can own and something that's powerful, and how that has sort of progressed over your attendance at the summit. And I'd like to sort of pick back up on that thread.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what it was. So I talked about me coming from Chicago, losing my friend Blair Holt, and taking that moment to ensure that it didn't happen again, using that energy, that those sentiments of, I want to go and do something about this, which could have been, I want to go find who did this and do something wrong to them, to doing something right and making long-term change. Sarah Clements, who's the other co-founder of this network, Sarah, Connecticut, born and raised in Connecticut, graduated from Sandy Hook. Her mom was a teacher at Sandy Hook, and her mom survived the shooting. Sarah had founded the Junior Newtown Action Alliance. And so when we came together and met and really just shared our stories, we always talk about the power of sharing stories, and realized that our stories were similar to really the spectrum of gun violence at that point, whether it was shootings that happened in communities and neighborhoods on the street, or mass shootings that happened in schools. And I think we were really able to gather a bunch of millennial organizers, just young organizers, that could connect with that in their own way and fashion, and were ready to do something about it. Actually, they were already doing things about it. They just needed the space and support to continue on the good work that they were doing.
Yeah. And you sort of, I think you touched on this a little bit. The Parkland movement is something that it's like, almost born out of years of, I mean, they're great. These young people are like kicking butt, you know, like they're doing a great job. But they've built that movement off of the sort of concept
they weren't starting from scratch.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely a manifestation of the Fight for a Future summit and network that happened. Nowhere else had you seen young people organize and very intentional and speaking directly about policy changes or in and around the gun violence conversation.
So, Karina, what made you get involved with the Fight for a Future network and the work that was happening through the network?
I think that it was important for me to find other people that I could relate to, in the sense of, you know, whether it was personal experience or just personal action of wanting to see change within our own community. I think that sometimes we tend to feel a little discouraged when we're doing things in our own community and realize that we get a little backlash, or realize that, you know, some of our friends or, you know, our family aren't really doing what we're doing, so we feel like we're kind of alone. So being in a community where you're able to relate and, you know, share ideas that are very similar, I think was very important to, you know, the continuous work that, you know, I think it's important of sharing.
Yeah. One of the threads I want to pull on that, Ronnie, you touched on a little bit in terms of your partnership with Sarah at the outset of the Fight for a Future network, and Karina, that we talked about off air before, was oftentimes when we think about school shootings or mass shootings, school shootings, people are thinking about sort of the high profile mass shootings that often take place. And Ronnie, you were talking about sort of bridging that divide in terms of, yes, those are important things, and we need to talk about it. We need to talk about how we prevent these mass shootings from taking place, but that's not the vast majority of gun violence. And Karina, your experience speaks to the fact that everyday gun violence is really important, as Ronnie does your friend's experience as well. And so, you know, just how important that is and how the summit helps to bridge this as well.
Yeah, I think that it does a very powerful movement with all of us knowing that we could relate with that. And also, I mean, just simply talking with each other, you know, within the summit or even outside of the summit, and being able to relate and to just share those little personal stories that it's like, well, this is happening in my community too. Well, this is also something that we could change, and just to be able to exchange ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely powerful, and I've talked about this a little bit in the past, but I actually didn't recognize that it was not normal for there to be a threat of gun violence. Like, I grew up in a neighborhood where it wasn't common, but it also wasn't unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Where even if the shooting didn't take place, we all knew somebody who had a gun in case it was going to take place, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't recognize, even after going to college and being 6 hours away, I still didn't fully recognize it. It wasn't until probably 3 years after that I sort of was able to step back and reflect and be like, that's actually not supposed to be how it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to be worried about getting shot. Even if you get into a fight with somebody, you should get into a fight with somebody. I'm sorry. You should not get into a fight with somebody. Wait. If you get into a fight with somebody, it should be a fist fight. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, growing up, where conflict ensued, especially physical conflict, the reality was there was always this threat of what gun violence could come. Mm-hmm. Knowing that you or someone else or someone out there could have a gun. It wasn't that unusual.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, gun violence is something that has been a part of my life. So my name comes from a cousin who was shot and killed months before I was born, and my mother gave me his name in honor of him. I grew up with an uncle that was paralyzed from the waist down, who was shot from gang violence, and Blair. And then in my high school, we had a former student who was there taking Saturday classes, laughed at someone in the class. They called someone and met them in the parking lot, shot and killed them in the parking lot. The next year, Gregory Robinson, freshman, basketball star, coming home from a basketball game, watching one of his mentors, his big cousin, got his car lit up with an AK-47. And for me, taking on that first charge of what can I do about this, I ended up being the go-to person for every situation that happened in my community. And so, again, that's why I really call our network a family. And having that space and support, that love that we all get when we're here. I mean, when we come here, we're taking care of family business. Yeah. And we're being our best going back home.
So I know we need to go to a break in just a little bit here. Before we do, I just want to acknowledge and say, especially for folks who haven't necessarily directly experienced this, this work isn't easy. This advocacy isn't easy, especially when you're talking about and sharing your personal experience as part of this advocacy, and there's a burden that comes with that. And just really want to honor and respect that, because I think that is so hugely important. That's part of what makes the summit gathering so powerful, is that you're bonding and sharing with other people who have oftentimes similarly experienced that. And as folks out there are doing work and leaning on people with personal stories and lived experience, please honor and respect the trauma and the burden that comes with that, because it is not easy to do this work and to relive that trauma.
Yeah, and we know our roles too. I mean, we have a survivor, I'm an organizer, and folks are comrades, like not allies. These mm-hmm. are folks who were locked arms in arms with us in the job done.
Absolutely. So you're listening to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. I'm your co-host, Charlotte Hancock, and we're here in studio with our guests from the Fight for a Future Network, and we will be right back in just a few minutes.
Sorry, now that you mentioned that...
And when we come back to speak with our guests, we're speaking again with Karina Sartiagin Vargas and also Ronnie Mosley. They've flown in town to D.C. for the 2019 Fight for a Future Summit. They're some of our fabulous network members who are really speaking truth to power and making the connection between gun violence prevention and criminal justice reform and what we can do as advocates in that space. If you'd like to find more about that work, you can find it at genprogress.org/the summit. And also, if you've experienced something like this and you want to be a part of next year's summit, applications will be open again in the spring.
All right, and welcome back to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. I'm your co-host, Brent J. Cohen.
And I'm Charlotte Hancock.
And we're in studio speaking with two guests about the work that they are doing to really transform the nation, because there's no problem, in my opinion, greater than gun violence. And when we really get to the root of this, we will have transformed the nation. And so we're speaking with Ronnie Mosley out of Chicago, who has been an advocate in this work for about 15 years, and Karina Sartiagin out of Denver, Colorado, who has been doing this work for years as well, really changing the narrative and the story and putting a face to what this is and saying, you know, enough is enough. We're at a point where young people are going to lead us out of it, and that's what we're working on now. So they are both in town for the Fight for a Future Summit, which is happening this week. And Ronnie's been here since the very beginning, helping to put together the model and thought behind what this looks like and co-founding this idea. And Karina,
I was actually involved with the very first
one. She was there.
Yeah, I was at the very first one.
Really?
Yeah, when they launched it, and then I kind of just was doing my own thing, and then I kind of reamped it back last year. So this is my third year here.
No way. So yeah. I knew you were here last year. I didn't know you were here at the first one.
Yeah, the very first one I was here.
I didn't know that either. I mean, this is like the beauty of the network is it like lives on outside of whoever has been making it happen at Generation Progress. Like, it continues.
Yeah, I mean, so we're at three. Like, I am the third executive director since this
started.
Since the network started, right? Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, coming into the role, people were like, you need to know about the Fight for a Future Network. Mm-hmm. And you need to get up to speed on it, and you need to make sure the summit happens, because this is too important and the network is too powerful for this work not to continue.
Yeah. Well, that's what I found very powerful, you know, when I came to the very first one and then coming back and then seeing the growth and how many other people are actually still involved in it, you know, and how many new people are actually coming to realize that this program is available for, you know, a lot of people who want to learn and who want to engage and make a difference.
So why is this an important time right now for gun violence prevention efforts? And I don't say gun control. For those out there, we're not talking about just gun. We're talking about gun violence prevention. Why is it important for gun violence prevention and criminal justice reform efforts to be happening right now?
So when we started this network, like, we were very much aware that, I think it was in 2 years, gun violence will be the number one cause of death for folks our age. Yeah. That time has come. It is the number one cause of death for our age. Again, what are we doing about it? And each year we've had wins. And we can't stop until we reach our goal, which is a future free from gun violence. That is why we're here. Mm-hmm. It's not just about background checks. Mm-hmm. It's not just about coming together and doing what we do. Like, we are doing this with a very clear intention. Mm-hmm. And as long as gun violence is here, we'll be here. Now, what we're hoping is that before we leave this earth, gun violence won't be here.
Yeah, I think the goal of the network is for there to be not a need for this network.
Exactly. Right? That's right. Mm-hmm.
if we end up, I mean, this is some of the difficulty. I was thinking about this, Ronnie, as you're talking about being the point person in your community that people were coming to, and I was like, that is awesome. I'm so glad that Ronnie is that person. I'm like, but why? Why is the weight of this on Ronnie's shoulders? Like, why is this something that you have to take on, as opposed to, like, why is it not our legislators, you know, local legislators, but like, more importantly, our federally elected legislators who are not taking this on? This is too big of a weight.
I just feel like it hasn't affected them yet. That's why it doesn't matter.
I don't even know.
And it shouldn't affect them. And I think that's why we're out here doing this work, because we want to prevent this pain. We want to prevent this, you know, effects to happen. Yeah. But it's not going to matter until...
Until they've been personally touched by it.
Yeah.
Well, they've been personally touched by it. You got some congressmen that still have not acted. I mean, My congressperson has been affected by gun violence. He lost his son to gun violence, Bobby Rush, but hasn't been the most effective person on the issue. Does try hard. Another congressman from Chicago, Danny Davis, grandson, not effective on the issue. So we understand that they don't act alone, and we understand that the power that the gun lobby has had, man, how's that power been, like, seeping out of the room? Their influence has become increasingly less than it has ever been, and I again attribute those things to really the work that the folks in our network do.
So I hear you, Ronnie. I do. Mm-hmm. I want to point out one thing on this, which is, you named two members of the House Democratic Caucus, right? And I think the House has passed some bills on this. On gun violence prevention, they're not the panacea. It's not everything that we need, but we're talking about universal background checks. We're talking about ERPO laws, right? The sort of like temporary restraining protective orders. We're talking about things like disarm hate. So if someone's been convicted of a misdemeanor hate crime, they can't have access to guns. So it's not everything. It's not nearly everything that we need. But there's been some movement, and what we've seen is the Senate Republican majority who is the one, the entity that's getting that gun lobby money, specifically Mitch McConnell, actively blocked this legislation from coming to pass. And so, yeah, I don't know Bobby Rush's record. I don't know Davis's record nearly as well as you do. I hear you on that. But they could be the best possible people on this, and it's still getting blocked in that other side of the chamber because Mitch McConnell and others like him are refusing to act on this. And, you know, on the criminal justice side of things, we saw similar for a long time, and you know, this is where I spent most of my 10 years, where the Republican Party and state houses would oftentimes, the Republican leadership block criminal justice reform. We're seeing that less and less. Now, I don't necessarily agree with the bills that they're passing. We can talk about that. But there's action being taken, and I wonder if part of it, to Karina's point, is because they now have family members who have been incarcerated. Because now opioids are in white suburbs, and they don't want their family being treated the way that black community was treated when there was a crack epidemic. Mm-hmm. Incarceration is not the answer for drugs anymore.
Yeah, opioids is a public health issue, right?
As it should be, but it wasn't back then, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely. We understand how government works, how policies get to be passed here. But it's been too long. It's not as if our representatives, our senators, are ignorant of this.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. They're well aware.
They're well aware. They know better.
And they know that we're aware that they get contributions from the NRA and other folks.
Mm-hmm.
And we've put that on blast. Yet they still don't have the courage to do what folks are asking, and when I say folks, I'm not just talking about like a few of us.
Yeah.
You know, what majority of Americans are asking.
97% of Americans want universal background checks. 70.
Is it 97?
97. Now. I think it's like 75% want assault weapons to be banned, right? Mm-hmm. This is not 10, 15, 20 people in a room. It's not the 50 people at the Fight for a Future Summit. This is a supermajority times supermajority of Americans in this country saying it's time to do this.
When we took that vote, I think it was 90%. Of Americans. So now we're at 97. I mean,
and it still hasn't happened.
Do we have to be at 107? Yeah.
it's 97% of Americans in Congress is what we're
arguing. In Congress.
The Senate, I guess.
Specifically. Yeah, so I mean, so when folks are calling their state legislature or they're calling their congressional reps, what should they be asking for right now?
To listen first. Understand.
Yeah,
where folks are coming from, especially if you don't have your own lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make you a better debater. That's going to allow you to speak better from the well, and that is really going to give you the ability, when you hear policy solutions, to analyze it in a way and ensure that it can be as least harmful that it can, even though it may be well-intended.
Mm-hmm.
And then take that action. Call for votes. Call for votes. Even if you don't believe it will pass, call for votes, because you got to keep working at it.
Yeah.
Like, this network has been in existence for 6 years. We didn't win everything we wanted to win in year one. That didn't mean we didn't come back in year two.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the progress happens because we continue. We persevere.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hear you on it. And I think that point about listening, right, is so important in understanding what the impacts of a policy would be. We did a panel earlier today and talking about the intersection of criminal justice reform and gun violence prevention. And I think for a lot of folks, they assume the way we're going to deal with gun violence is by making the prison sentences for carrying a gun longer.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that that's just... Prison isn't the panacea. Incarceration is not the way that you win this. You cannot incarcerate your way out of violence. You cannot incarcerate your way to safety. In fact, there's pretty good data out there that says incarceration leads to more violence on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
That incarceration is not connected to safety in communities. And we know that so often, let's be frank, folks are trying to address these mass shootings, but are doing it with laws that are going to disproportionately impact black and brown communities who are less likely to be victims or especially perpetrators of the mass shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And so the everyday gun violence needs legislative solutions and needs funding for things like violence interruption to address some of the root causes here so that we're not just disproportionately harming one community to fix a problem that doesn't actually exist in that community. So when we come back, we want to hear We want to hear more about the work that you're doing, about the way the Fight for a Future Network plays into it, and what folks should be doing at home as we continue to think about what this looks like on a state and city and federal level in terms of advocacy.
Yeah, you've been listening to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. I'm your co-host, Brent J. Cohen.
And I'm Charlotte Hancock.
And so one of the things that we've touched on a little bit here, but I want to dive a bit deeper on, is this intersection between gun violence and gun violence prevention and criminal justice reform. I think far too often we think of those things as sort of being almost at odds, where, like, of course, you know, prison is the answer, or of course you need to incarcerate if someone has a gun or has used a gun. And so I think oftentimes we have a sort of binary choice that we offer to survivors of violence and to the family members of victims of violence, where we say, you know, okay, we found the person who committed this act. It's either nothing happens to them or prison happens to them. And there's very rarely a sort of in-between or another option or a third or a fourth way. And so, Karina, as someone who's who has survived this violence and is now an activist and active in this work, if you could share a bit, and they found the person who shot you.
Yeah, so the person that actually shot me was found guilty as well in court, and they were sentenced to 35 years plus. However, obviously, he kept trying to appeal, and he got one of those appeals granted. And about 2 years ago, we went back to trial, and he actually was released. And it was a very interesting thing to kind of put in perspective at the time, because when the first trial tend to happen, it's just, you know, the system doing what the system does, you know, trying to prosecute this person, and then you're just going along with it. But then when you come to realize, you know, years later that this person, you know, is doing something or wants to have a life still as well, you know, you kind of see it in both realms, with whether is my life going to change if he's in jail, or is it going to be the same? Because the harm is already done. I think that at this point it's more of like a healing thing, you know, being able to distinguish if it's going to make a difference. Are you going to just have, you know, heal your own family, or make two families hurt? So I think that's where it comes down to.
Wow. And I think and that is a complexity that the criminal legal system just doesn't account for.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complexity that says it's either all or nothing.
Exactly. It's either you put him in jail or you'll see him walking in your neighborhood, when inevitably I feel like there has to be some kind of middle ground, some alternatives, right?
And one of the things, you know, I think people have different philosophies on it. There are definitely folks out there who believe in prison abolition, and nobody should. I think there are valid reasons for why people think that way.
Mm-hmm.
There are also people who are looking at, you know, systems in Norway and Germany and saying, okay, if there is going to be incarceration, if we are going to take folks out of the community, what does that experience look like so that it's not the American prison system?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the other reality is 95% of people come home from prison at some point,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in 7 years on an appeal or it's 35 years when the sentence runs out.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually folks will be back in the mm-hmm. same communities. And what are we doing to address root causes in communities? What are we doing to build communities? What are we doing to
heal both sides?
Heal both sides.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean, what are we doing to heal both sides?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it almost seems as if, like, when we talk about children, we have this concept of a timeout, right? And if someone does something wrong, we put them in a corner, we isolate them for a few moments, but we understand that they're going to reengage with their fellow children or fellow friends and so forth. But when we transition to adults, we try to leave out that last part. We exclude individuals, but then we don't really want them back in society, or at least our justice system, the way, from my opinion, my viewpoint, that's what I'm seeing. you know, we talked about this earlier. It's the Department of Corrections, but what are we correcting?
Yeah,
that's right. And it's happening to kids too, right? Like they are waving kids into the adult system.
Exactly.
Right.
We're charging them as adults.
Charging them as adults until just a couple of years ago in New York State. If you were 16 years old, literally until a couple of years ago, if you were 16 and you got arrested for any offense, anyone, you were charged as an adult. 16. I think Chicago, just Illinois, just raised the age recently, right? It was 17 for a long time. And that doesn't count for the 14 and 15-year-olds who are already being waved up to the adult system. So to your point, like, what? How are we healing both sides? How are we taking a deeper look at it? And are the policymakers reflective of the communities who are most impacted by these issues? Do we have policymakers at the table who know what it's like to come from a community that's both dealt with gun violence and dealt with mass incarceration? Because if we're being honest, we know that there's a whole lot of overlap in terms of where those communities are.
Yeah, it's not a true representation. You know, when we talk about how widespread this issue is and our current makeup of Congress, it is not a fair representation. And I think that, you know, if we say that we're better than this, right? Like, we have this moral compass that says that if someone shoots a person, whether they died or not, you've done something wrong.
Right.
And that's based on the moral beliefs that we have. But we don't work to correct that behavior or that thought process. We just say you did something wrong, and of it, you're canceled, right?
Never forgivable.
Never forgivable. Mm-hmm. And when someone does come home, when folks are re-entering the space society, they're still operating almost in the same ways.
Mentality. They got them in there.
So we have just about 2 minutes left, and want to turn to both of you and Karina. Like, what if for folks at home listening right now, what should they be doing? What can they do to really get involved in this effort? Do you have any advice for folks about how to take a first, or for some folks, a 50th step into this realm of activism?
Well, I mean, I'm going to talk specifically to the survivors, you know, and people that know somebody that, you know, also was perpetuated by gun violence. I think it's important to have conversations and not be numb to it, not just be like, oh, well, it's another one. I think it's important to just continue to keep the conversation going and knowing that there's others, you know. You're just because within your group of people, you can't relate, know that there's other people also talking about it. So it's important to just make sure you're getting out there, just sharing. I mean, in any way, I think it's important, whatever way you can get involved.
Yeah, thank you. Just get involved. That's a huge first step. Ronnie?
Yeah, if you care and you want to do something about it, because I think that's where we all started. We cared enough to do something about it. The Fight for a Future Network is a great entry point. Mm-hmm. And I know that, like, you know, we're obviously a national network, but we really believe in being on the ground and being local. So whether you reach out to, whether you go to genprogress.org and connect with a staff here at Gen Progress, or you tweet one of our members, we can help you find a space in your community that you can be active, no matter what role you want to play in this fight. Like I said, whether you're a survivor, whether you're an organizer, whether you're a budding ally or a comrade, like, there is space for you to do this work, and it's going to take all of us to do this work.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to take listening, something you said earlier. Whether you're running for office, want to run for office, want to be an organizer, or an organizer, listening to the folks most impacted, because the folks most impacted are going to lead this movement forward.
Well, thanks so much, y'all, for joining us on a great show. You've been listening to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. These were members of our Fight for a Future Network at Generation Progress, Karina Sartigin and Ronnie Mosley, and we'll talk to y'all next week.